Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter. Happy New Year to all of you out there. And to you, Kyle. Victory Monday for the Cardinals. Can't believe we're even saying that. I mean, going into the game, it just looked like this was going to be a really tough game for the Cardinals in so many different ways, particularly coming off the previous week's disappointing game. Wow. What's even more of a wow is, this was a statement game from Drew Petsing. Extraordinaire. I mean, this is a magnus opus. There's no other way to look at it except that the Cardinals and their offensive line and Petsing's play calling and James Conner and Kyler Murray playing his best second half of the year. Wow. I mean, this was thorough domination up front and of time of possession. Cardinals really had it 2-1. I mean, in total yards, I mean, check this one out. Cardinals had, in total yards, okay, 449 yards to Philly's 275 in Philly. You know, with Philly being 11-4. And yes, they've been struggling in this, you know, in December, but I mean, wow, come on. 32 first downs for the Cardinals, 17 for the Eagles. 16 passing first downs from Kyler. That's a record this season. 14 rushing first downs. Third down efficiency, 5-10. The Eagles, 4-9. Fourth down efficiency, 2-2. Eagles, 1-1. Total plays, Cardinals, 72. Eagles, 47. And it's total drives of 8-7 only. You would think that, you know, the Cardinals would have had way more drives, but they didn't. Yards per play, 6.2 for Cardinals, 5.9 for Eagles. Passing yards, 228 for Cardinals, 184 for Eagles. Rushing yards, 221 for Cardinals, 91 for Eagles, holding the Eagles under 100 yards.
Also, the fact that they outgained the Eagles by 130 yards on the ground signifies the first time all season the Eagles have been outgained by more than 100 yards rushing.
Great stat. Thank you, Kyle.
Only the fourth time they've been outgained at all, first time they've been outgained by more than 100 yards.
Right. Wow. Red zone, made in attempts, 4-6 for the Cardinals, 2-2 for Eagles. Penalties, 5-25 for Cardinals, 4-49 for Eagles. One of those penalties was huge in the fourth quarter when the Eagles had the ball following the failed onside kick. turnovers, 1-1. Wow. So time of possession, 39-39 to 20-21. Wow. I mean, these just long drives. Plus, you know, I was been looking back to try to find a game. I was doing that this week, even. You know, after seeing Justin Fields stack 3 touchdowns in a row on the Cardinals, I was saying like to myself, when was the last time we saw Kyler Murray stack 3 touchdowns in a row? And what had been concerning me is it just seemed like, you know, particularly after a good drive, Kyler comes back with a 3-and-out too often. It just seems like there isn't this consistency of focus. You know, the the three and outs late in the game in the 49ers game, really disappointing. And it's just and then the failed 2 minute drills last week, the week before, awful, both of them awful. And you know, I have to give Kyle, my co-host and producer, credit. He asked me a couple weeks ago, do you think Drew Petzing's offense is a good fit for Kyler Murray? And I said no. And you recall that, right, Kyler?
Yeah, no, I gave Petzing, I believe, an A-minus grade for the season, despite the mixed results in terms of offensive production game to game, because I felt like they had shown signs of improvement, and despite the talent on the field, they had made marked improvements on offense from last season.
Well, you know, from the get-go, they've been very impressive running the football. Mm-hmm. James Conner has been a huge part of that, but the play up front is more physical and dynamic than we've had in a long time. And credit Clayton Adams, the offensive line coach as well, who's done a heck of a job working that offensive front. Boy, oh boy. But my concern was, and I said no, because run heavy offenses tend to be, you have to have the right kind of quarterback for that, like a Joe Flacco, who can go stretches without throwing a ball and then be accurate and get into a quick rhythm when he needs to. Amazing what he's doing in Cleveland right now. Deshaun Watson has not played well in a Stefanski offense yet. I mean, flashes here and there. So that was and Baker Mayfield had his issues with it. And I see Baker Mayfield playing so well this year in a more wide open offense, more wide receiver friendly offense down in Tampa Bay. And I thought to myself, I don't think this is right for Kyler. Well, after yesterday, I mean, you know, if Kyler can produce like this, the way he did, and the offense be so run heavy, this is ideal. I mean, you can't deny it. I can't deny it. The question now is, can this become a pattern? Can winning up front and also getting good passing production from Kyler and the receivers? I mean, I spent all last week arguing we have talent at wide receiver. Everyone's saying our talent's awful. There's, worst wide receivers in the league. And I kept saying, no, 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 no. I mean, we just discount the talent on this team, like, unbelievable. Well, a week later, how's our wide receiver group looking now? And what's astonishing to me is that Kyler managed this off one practice during the week. He was out with a quote-unquote holiday bug for Wednesday and Thursday. Came in Friday with one practice and straightened things out. Some with particularly got on the same page with Greg Dortch, who's been magnificent. Got things going finally with Wilson, Michael Wilson. Had the glitch in the first half, unfortunately, on a drive that we were marching down the field. And Wilson took the inside route and Kyler threw it the outside right to a safety. And the safety takes it 99 yards. Oh, my God. Weaving his way through people. And who's tremendous, I posted this on Twitter, was the tremendous irony that the player that the Eagles drafted with the third round pick they got from the Cardinals for breaking the NFL rules, hiring rules with Gannon, was Sidney Brown. And he's the one who took it to the house and made it 14-3 then. And I thought, oh boy, here come the floodgates. And, it was clear that, there was quite a miscommunication. Kyler had audibled. It was almost like a reincarnation of the A.J. Green debacle you know, of miscommunication on a hot play, on an audible. And if you look at the way that the Eagles were playing Michael Wilson, he made the correct cut. He was wide open to the inside, and the safety was helping deep beyond it. That's why he was there to make the play. So, I mean, Wilson read it correctly if it was an option route and Kyler didn't. But we don't know what the exact play call was. And I'm also thinking of the time, you know, Kyler had one day basically to try to iron things out with Michael Wilson after last week's struggles. You know, again, it's been 3 weeks of struggles with Wilson. Well, I mean, Michael Wilson yesterday showed up huge in this game. 4 catches for 35 yards, but he had the touchdown and the 2-point conversion. Wow. So great. And, you know, only 35 yards, but these were huge catches at the time. And it was 4 catches on 6 targets, one of the missed targets being the interception. Greg Dortz, 7 out of 7 targets from Kyler. How about that diving first down catch he caught at the beginning of the game on an out pass that Kyler threw ahead of him this time on time? They made that adjustment, thank goodness. I mean, this is something I've been talking about for 3 weeks and arguing online how late Kyler is on these throws. He's not throwing off the breaks. He did it there perfectly and threw it at a place where only Dortz could catch it. It was awesome. Dortz, 7 for 7, 82 yards, 11.7 average, highest on the team, with a long of 36. I mean, feed the torch, please.
Carry the torch.
So exciting. Yes. Carry him and sign him long term. Get him signed up. He's, plus, look at what he's doing on punt returns. He's got to be up amongst the NFL leaders. He had 2 yesterday for 29 yards, 14.5 average. I mean, this is good stuff out of Dortz. He's such a, to me, he's core. And, you know, Rondale Moore held on to that first down catch. Thank goodness it came out when the ball hit the ground, you know, and the turf can't cause the fumble. So thank goodness we held on to that one. But he was 3 of 4 targets for 26 yards. Elijah Higgins, who's making a, you know, he's contributing, not only catching the football as a larger target, 2 catches and 2 targets for 21 yards. He's also blocking. The tight ends are blocking like unbelievable. I don't know if you've seen Brian Baldinger's little take this morning on Trey McBride's blocking. Check it out. I'll post it here on Revenge of the Birds when I post the podcast. But, I mean, to see how the tight ends are blocking, Trey McBride is balling. Plus McBride, 6 of 7 targets, 48 yards, 8.0. Start the game with a great 26-yard play. I was shocked. You know, here I was visiting with John Stolness of the Eagles on his podcast last week. I'm talking to a few days ago, talking about this game, and you know, and he was talking about McBride and how they got to keep an eye on McBride, and I was also talking about giving props to Matt Patricia, who I thought would have a good game plan for the Cardinals. Yet, I mean, how many games have the Cardinals started with that beautiful bootleg where Kyler hides the ball, circles to his left, and then throws to McBride to start the game? It's been a winner like 3 or 4 times, as I, you know, previous to this. The fact that McBride was so wide open on that play, first play of the game, said to me, uh-oh, we got something here. Matt Patricia obviously didn't do his homework to know, get his players ready to know that could be coming first play or whenever it could be coming. You got to defend that. And McBride, I mean, to start the game that way was a, you know, real great, momentum builder for the Cardinals and their offense and moving the ball down the field. Oh my goodness, it was impressive. And so, you know, you're getting such great balance. I mean, you've got 221 yards rushing and 232 yards passing. I mean, what could be better than that? I mean, if this is what the future holds for Cardinals offense under Drew Petzing, who, I'll tell you, I mean, the other thing about Petzing yesterday was, and I tweeted this out, was, you know, I hadn't seen him in a like winter wool hat, Cardinals hat before. And so they're showing him calling plays on the sideline. And suddenly, I just had this flashback. I mean, he looked a lot to me like a young Don Coryell, facially. I mean, you'd have to put real hair on him and whatnot. But with the cap on, I mean, he had looked like Don Coryell. And I'll tell you what, yesterday he coached like Don Coryell. There was magic in what he was doing. And so encouraging to see. I was worried that Kyler's going to be, you know, kind of fading off the way Dobbs did. And I did a thing last week on comparing Dobbs's first six games to Kyler's. It's on Revenge of the Birds, an article I wrote. And the numbers were remarkably similar to Dobbs's first game to Kyler's. In fact, Dobbs was ahead of Kyler on a number of categories, which was, you know, I had a feeling was going to be that way. But you know how Dobbs kind of peaked earlier and then started struggling. And I was worried that this was going to be the same pattern for Kyler, except that, wow. I mean, this game in late December was Kyler's best game in late December of his career. And in Philly against an 11 win team in week 16, I mean 17. So, wow. I mean, what that does too suggests is really exciting. And, you know, this can continue. I mean, the game that came closest, I think, was the 25-23 win in Dallas 2 years ago. Was the only game in December that Kyler won. I think it was December. It might have been even early January. It was the second last game of the season, I believe. And then we turn around and get wonked. But yeah, it was second last game. Cause then we turn around and get wonked by the Seahawks at home, which we now are looking at. And I think this Seahawks game has major significance for the Cardinals. I mean, they have a chance now to really finish things off this year, you know, on such a high note. And as awful as they have been against the NFC West, to cap this off, to get their first NFC West win over Pete Carroll, who's kicked the Cardinals' ass on last games of the season, seemingly forever, and took the wind out of the Cardinals' sails. They did it during the playoff year. That cost the Cardinals the NFC West. Cardinals win that game, they win the NFC West. They didn't. They got whacked by Russell Wilson in his last game as a Seahawk. Seahawks were out of the playoffs. They had nothing to play for. Well, as they say, the Cardinals are out of the playoffs, and I think they have a lot to play for here because, you know, as excited as everyone should be for Jonathan Gannon, what happened for him in Philly, without being able to handle, you know, his business in the NFC West, we are never going to have a chance. He handled the NFC East pretty well, going 2-2 and had his chances in both the game and the Giants game, being up 20 to nothing at halftime. But that's a division he knows well, having been in Philadelphia. What I want to know is, when is he going to know the NFC West well enough to come up with game plans to counter what they do? And as I've been documenting to you during the course of those games, it doesn't look like he's done a heck of a lot of homework in how to defend a Sean McVay offense, a Kyle Shanahan offense. And he had his struggles, was a little better in Seattle against Geno Smith. But that game was never really, it was pretty much dominated time of possession by the Seahawks. We couldn't get off the field, actually. It was so frustrating. But, I mean, this is what's got to change. If we're going to get really excited about Gannon, that's got to change big time. And, you know, I asked a question this week in a poll, you know, do you think that Jonathan Gannon will ever be able to match wits in the NFC West with the likes of Shanahan, McVay, and Carroll? And most of the fans said they didn't think so. And I've been worried about that as well. But what this win can do, I mean, momentum-wise and inspiration-wise, if this can translate over into divisional games next year, and this kind of momentum can take root, you know, anything's possible. And it gives you hope. I mean, the players give you great hope. I tweeted out yesterday, I mean, I know some fans were just pissed that the Cardinals, you know, basically may have just played their way out of drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. And I made the argument, you know, winning is a panacea. You know, it's the best thing that can happen to a football team. I mean, for the sake of a draft pick, to deprive those players yesterday for playing their tails off from opening kickoff to end, if they had to walk out of that stadium feeling the pain of a close loss, that would have been brutal. That would have been so undeserved. And I have to tell you, I was so upset when Gannon kicked the onside kick, because it was shades of the week before where he went for 2 points, knowing that on those occasions he'd been 3 for 12, and being not in a position yet to really need to go for two, I thought took a little air out of the sails of, you know, getting this back to a close game, and was really upsetting to me. You know, because, you know, I was wondering, does this guy understand momentum? And then I'm wondering, is this the way to try to tank? Like, just knock any... The other thing that translates to this to me as well is that I can't even begin to tell you the number of times this year a Cardinal defender will make a great play and they take him immediately out of the game. I cannot, in my wildest, you know, imaginations, understand how you don't ride something that's hot, how you don't go with the momentum of the moment. Like, if Dennis Gardeck's making plays, keep him in there. Take him right out. I mean, like, if the Cardinals just scored a touchdown, kick the extra point. Try to carry it over and, you know, inspire the defense. Instead, it's like air deflates a little. And then you wonder about the momentum moving forward, and it didn't work against the Bears, unfortunately. And then, so this week, we tie the game late, 6 minutes left. And you try an onside kick that basically is a gift kick to the other team, to the Eagles, and now they're close to field goal range already. And your players are busting their butts, and you risk it all on that play. And some people were saying, oh, it was brilliant because, you know, he didn't want a long drive where the Eagles ran out the clock and kicked the game-winning field goal. Well, I mean, you're willing to risk the momentum shift there? I mean, your defense had started to play well. Why not kick it deep? See if you can pin the Eagles deep. and get a punt and then get the ball back yourself. If that's, you know, as a defensive coach, if that's what he feels he has to do as a head coach and not rely on his defense, when they've been playing pretty well all game, I mean, nothing, you know, like we said, I mean,
I still haven't figured out whether it's dumb luck or genius or somewhere in between with that play call. Because at first, when it happened, I made the same jokes as everyone else. It's like, oh, he thinks his defense is so bad that they're going to go onside with 5.5 minutes to go. And then the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, wait, the fact that it worked out, it's actually a brilliant strategy if you assume that the game won't end in a touchdown. There's no, you know, if the game ends in a touchdown, you lose, or at the best case scenario, you go to overtime. But if you say the Eagles are going to end up with a field goal anyways, because they'll just run and sit on the ball if they get into field goal range, then bringing them 30 yards closer isn't the worst thing in the world. I've kind of gone back and forth on it now. I'm stuck between whether it's genius or dumb luck, or they just, the game script happened to work out because the defense got a stop after the not converting the onside kick. And if it's a 7-point game with 2 minutes to go, maybe it looks less brilliant than if they hold them to a field goal, which credit to the defense for holding them to the field goal on that.
Right. No, that's a really good point. Because I've been going back and forth on that myself a little bit. I just feel like coming off last week where the 2-point try really was a deflator, to now be so excited to tie this game and have it go down the wire with so much at stake for the players, you know, I mean, for them battling in this game and being right in it and mounting this furious comeback to try this lame onside kick at that moment, I just thought was a slap in the face of the entire team. And, you know, I mean, this is why I tweeted out at the end of the game is that my New Year's wish, I mean, if there's some, you know, analytics sheet that says you should do that in this situation, which I can't fathom, but it's possible. So you'll like this, Kyle, because it involves Chargers coach. I said, my New Year's wish for the Cardinals is that Buda Baker sneaks into Jonathan Cannon's offense and burns the analytics sheet that Brandon Staley mailed him. I mean, dude,
that's pretty clever. That's pretty clever. Yeah.
My worry is he's going to be the Brandon. I mean, he's making these just bizarre, consistent, you know, like go for two calls. Now, give him credit. He went for the fourth down play that, you know, Kyler converted to Wilson. That was awesome. But I think in that situation, it was down 7. I was glad to see him go for it there. Instead of the field goal, I didn't see how, you know, the field goal is going to help as much given the time left in the game and given the circumstances. So I was really happy to see him go for it there. I think that made a lot of sense. But, man, I mean, if it had been earlier, the field goal might have made sense because of the, you know, they weren't close to the goal line. It was like 7 yards, I think.
And to your point about the analytics, if Gannon's thinking they go onside kick here and the Eagles recover and the Eagles do end up scoring a touchdown, say the same thing happens, the Cardinals go down the field, Dortch makes the catch, they score the touchdown at the end. I bet you he goes for two at the end of that game, the same way that Man Campbell did in the Lions and Cowboys game. I guarantee you he goes for two for the win in that scenario, which maybe makes it easier to convert onside if you trust that your offense is going to be able to score in however much time the Eagles gave him, 2 minutes or whatever it is. But I'm stuck on that.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I think he probably would have. But how about an analytics sheet that talks about percentages? Like you've tried this, you're like, you know, 3 for, 15 now? and these are 12, 3 for 12. I mean, at which point do percentages override analytics?
Particularly also because the Cardinals are, I think they're now 12 for 31 on fourth downs, which is last in the NFL, I believe, in fourth down conversion rate.
Yeah, that's on fourth. And, you know, but the percentage of 2-point plays the Cardinals have run this year is awful. So it's way low. It might be one of the worst in the league. But they did convert on the 2-pointer to Wilson yesterday from Kyler in a beautiful back of the end zone throw. It was just awesome. But when your players are fighting their asses off, to get cute like that and to toy with momentum, I mean, what you want is your, you know, okay, defense, man, we tied the game. Do your thing. Get out there. You've only held that. You've held them to 7 points the whole second half. And if, you know, going to be honest about it, the only 14 points in the first half because the other 7 came from the interception. The Sidney Brown 99-yard interception. So, oh, I mean, the Cardinals defense was playing well enough that they could, you know, you could see what could happen and put it in their hands. At some point, you got to do that. And, you know, I like the way the defense was playing in this game. They were stickier than normal. It wasn't, they didn't give them easy zones to pass through. It made it more, you know, guys were chasing, you know, to hold that passing game of the Eagles in check pretty much was impressive. I mean, they were, sometimes they got beat. The touchdown, you know, here's one thing that I'd love to see Gannon change is that when you're in goal line, you got to play a man head up on the tight end. There's just no way you're going to defend him with a guy who's 5 yards into the end zone. I mean, and he's done this repeatedly. Get a guy head up, put Buddha head up on the tight end, like Goddard yesterday, and jam him at the line and then leverage him. But instead, Buddha's paying 5 yards. He's playing 5 yards deep, and you know, like we happened in the Bears game too, for a wide open touchdown was, you know, Buddha got picked off in traffic, and then Goddard's wide open. It makes you look like a fool as a defensive coach with all the wide open guys who score touchdowns, and so you haven't coached it properly, or played it properly to put your players in the best position to succeed and therefore your team. Is it, you know, that's a part of Gannon's game that's been a real weakness is in the, you know, he's been really good. Give him credit for being stout up front in goal line situations when he goes into the goal line defense. they've been, you know, I thought they fought really hard on those, you know, the brotherly pushes we saw from, they even stopped one from Jalen Hurts, if you recall. And then on the next play, they got it. But they're really tough up front there. And I mean, we're getting, people want to malign the Cardinals' interior defensive line. But, you know, this is a defensive line that helps keep the Eagles under 100 yards rushing. And look at the production you got from these guys. First of all, Chris Barnes had a great game. I tweeted out he's the best and most physical inside linebacker we've seen in Gannon's defense this season. He had tied with Hambone for most tackles with 7, 4 of them solo, and a tackle for loss and a quarterback hit. PJ Ozulari, 5 tackles. He was making tackles. Buddha Baker in the box, 4 tackles. Roy Lopez, 3 tackles. Victor Dimakije, three tackles. Kevin Strong, three tackles. Jalen Thompson, three tackles. Dar Gardeck with one. Collins with one. Dante Stills with one. I mean, this was a group effort. They were swarming to the ball, and they were playing against a very good Eagles offensive line. I thought they held up pretty dang well. I mean, only giving up 4.0 per average on carries, on 23 carries for 91 yards. The longest run was for 16, and Hurts had one run for 13. So you even take those two away, and it's 3 yards per carry. That's pretty good stuff, you know. So, and I like this kid, Starling Thomas, the cornerback. He got beat by Julio Jones on a post pass. Again, in that situation, I mean, this is a kid who plays better when you play him up on people and let him leverage and chase. And I hope they do that in the Seahawks game. Otherwise, you know, Lockett or Metcalf or Najigba, I mean, they're gonna school anyone who's gonna give them cushion off of their dig routes, because they're just too quick. And hopefully they'll bring guys like Thomas up. But this kid is a baller. And he had one really good pass defense on a deep pass. You know, if you play him right and put him in a position to be physical, this kid can play. Hamilton did a good job in coverage yesterday, and you know, it was one of the better defensive games the Cardinals have played all year. Credit Nick Rallis. He had him ready, and you know, so yeah, I would have kicked it off and tried to relish in the momentum and try to get the defense fired up. What it would mean to them to get the stop that then leads to the game winner would have been a lot. But in a way, they did get the stop. Well, they did get the stop that led to the game winner because of it kind of that maybe the biggest play of the game was the holding call. You know, that on Mulata, that was huge on a 2nd and 9. To now it went 1st and 20. So now it went 1st and 20. And the next pass was Hurts ran. Remember those Hurts runs that he got booed on? So Hurts runs twice in a row for 1 yard. Look at the job they did swarming him on those plays. Ojulari and Strong tackled him on the first one. Buddha tackled him beautifully on the second one. The fans are booing. Now it's 3rd and 19. And yeah, sorry about that. On my ESPN, it does that all the time. I'm checking my ESPN as I'm talking so I can see the plays. But, you know, and then, you know, on 3rd and 19, they called the timeout, and then they just threw a short pass left. This incurred the ire of the fans, too, for 4 yards. And then Elliott nails a 43-yard field goal and with 2 minutes and 33 seconds left. And let's recap this beautiful game-winning drive. So, first, Dortch returns it for 26 yards, running his tail off. So it's 1st and 10. He got it up to the 30. Connor for 1 yard. 2nd and 9. Murray short pass left to Rondale Moore for 12 yards. That was Moore's biggest catch of the game. That was huge. 2 minute warning. 1st and 10 on the Arizona 43. Connor left end for 6 yards. So 2nd and 4, which is what you want. It sets you up in a, you know, you pass or run. Kyler, a short pass to Dortch for 10 yards. That was beautiful connection on that, on the left side of the field. And right on the right on the sticks, and lofted it over. If you recall, the defensive line was beautiful. First and 10, short right pass to Dortch. That was the beautiful one, the 36-yarder that his yak yard after catches were fantastic, and got it all the way down first and goal to the Philly 5. I thought for a second there he was going to score. It was so exciting. There's 41 seconds left. So Connor then got nailed in the back, Connor took it down to the 2-yard line, second and a goal from the 2, timeout Philly, and then Connor, right guard for 2 yards, pounded it in, and I was worried Gannon would go for 2 on that one. Thank goodness he went for 1, 35-31 with essentially 32 seconds left. That was the winner. Wow. What a game.
And then I don't know if you saw the video that Mike Silver put out, but one of the media relations staffers for the 49ers had his phone. And as the Niners are watching James Conner cross the goal line, because it guarantees them the number one seed, you see George Kittle throwing his hands up and Deebo Samuel running off in the tunnel, and everyone's excited that the Cardinals beat the Eagles.
Yeah, and we've had at Revenge of the Birds some 49er fans come in and thank the Cardinals. You're always welcome on the board. We try to keep things civil.
49ers and Cowboys fans were big Cardinal fans yesterday.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm a NFC West fan, so if we're not going to be there, I'd love it to see. I'm real proud of our division and how strong it is, and to have 3 teams in playoff contention. God, I hope and pray we're one of them next year. So yeah, I'm fine with that. They earned it, and they kicked our butts twice. So, and will I be rooting for them in the playoffs? Probably not. to tell you the truth, I'm kind of more of a Lions fan right now than I am, because I'm fascinated with what's going on with that team, because they've just never done it like this. And so, but just really excited about what this means for the Cardinals this late in the season. I'm not worried about the draft. And you know what? To tell you the truth, having seen Kyler play at that level, now the bar has been set. And I think it's just such a credit to Kyler that he came back and played this year to begin with, and under these circumstances. And I thought, he could have bugged out of this week's game. It was looking like a sabotage. It was looking like coming into the Lions then, to tell you the truth, especially the way the really sort of way things played out the week before against the Bears. I mean, that was really the Bears keep winning, so, and they're playing really well. So, but still, I thought it was a disappointing effort against the Bears in a lot of ways, and I was expecting them to play better than they did. And those 2-minute drills at the end of the half were just such flops, and just akin to the third and give up offense that we've seen too often this year from the Cardinals. That really was discouraging to me. I mean, you got to be able to have a better plan and run it much smoother and quicker with just, decisiveness the way that good teams do. But, to see what happened here yesterday was such a shocker. I mean, one of the sweetest mea culpas I'll ever give you was when I was on with John Stolness, I predicted 42-10 Eagles. And now I'm happily embarrassed to say that. Very happily. I'm elated. I think nothing could have been better for the program than a win. And, we're still going to have high draft picks. I'm not worried about the draft. I'm worried about having the youngest coaching staff in the league, and there being, this staff needs to grow up in a hurry and mature. But I'll tell you what, we have a dandy going with Petzing, and Kyle was right. And I do offer Kyle a mea culpa too. Kyle's absolutely right. I didn't see this coming of this magnitude, against, particularly in Philly against, you know, the Eagles. We saw it in Pittsburgh. How about that? The Cardinals go 2-0 in the state of Pennsylvania. It's just, wow. I mean, and, you know, and here's the thing for me is, as someone who's been, you know, fighting hard to, you know, fighting hard against this notion that the Cardinals suck and they have no talent. I've been fighting that hard every week this year. It just, this just defies. You can't go into Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and win the way that the Cardinals did with suck talent. It just doesn't happen. And, you know, it's, you have to have enough talent to get it done. And we saw yesterday there was enough talent on the field to get it done in a hostile environment, one of the more hostile environments in the National Football League. I mean, let's do some comparatives. I mean, the Eagles with all their, you know, Hurts, 160 yards, 67 yards passing. Kyler, 232. DeAndre Swift, 61 yards rushing. James Conner, twice that, 128. Second rusher for them, Hurts, 25 yards. Michael Carter, 61. How about Michael Carter? What a great waiver claim that was. Third running back, Kenneth Gainwell, two carries for 5 yards, 2.5. Our third running back, well, actually, Kyler got 5 for 24, 4.8. But then Rondale Moore took the ball twice for 8 yards. That's even more than what their guy got. Leading receiver, Greg Dortch, 82 yards. Leading receiver for the Eagles, A.J. Brown, 53 yards. Trey McBride, 6 catches, 48 yards. Dallas Goedert, 5 catches, 47 yards. Michael Wilson, 4 catches, 35 yards. Julio Jones, 2 catches, 34 yards. One of them kind of a fluke on that, you know, Andre Chachere deflection. Holding Devonta Smith to 3 catches and 30 yards. Who would have thought that? I mean, Rondale Moore nearly had 3 catches and 26 yards. I mean, come on, man. This is great stuff. And it takes talent to pull it. When you ball control takes the most incredible amount of talent, people don't realize this, because look what happened to the Eagles in their last drive. One penalty can just ruin the whole drive, as we've seen it sometimes this year. So you got to be penalty free, but you also have to be skilled to convert the third downs, be skilled to create third and shorts, be skilled to, you know, run the ball consistently well, and get, you know, as the Cardinals did, they averaged 5.5 yards per carry, 40 carries. They had 40 carries to the Eagles 23. And get this stat, on top of the first downs, 32 first downs and 0 punts. When is the last time we've seen a Cardinals team put up 0 punts? Drew Petzing, love you, man. And I'm with Kyle. Your Greg just went up into the A's. Because you've got this now out of Kyler. We know what Kyler's capable of in a hostile environment against a really good team. And, you know, Kyler had some glitches early, but boy, did he iron it out. And, I mean, to score 4 touchdowns in that second half was just a thing of beauty. And a 2-point conversion. 29 points in that second half to 10. That's how you outscored him. 29 to 10. Drew Petzing, game ball to you. Everyone on the offense, game ball to you. When I post the Brian Baldinger offensive line blocking, just sit there in awe. It's going to be in the thread that we post right now. Boy, are our guys getting after it. And I'm just really hoping they can redeem the NFC West scenario this year by playing the Seahawks really well next week and bringing one home against them. I mean, I'm sick and tired of losing to Pete Carroll on the last day of the season the way he's done consistently, and no matter whether they're in it or not. I mean, this would be huge to get at least one NFC West win this year. Coming into next year, I think that could be a real booster. Like I said, don't worry about the draft. I mean, there are two stud tackles at the beginning of the draft. There are two other stud running wide receivers. Don't worry about it. I mean, it's more important for the future of this team that they really feel a sense of momentum going into this offseason, because it's one of the most important off seasons in the history of the franchise. No question about it. And what's clear as day now is that if anyone was like planning a mock for one of the quarterbacks in the first round, that's now, you know, forget it. It's not going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen to begin with. I did a marvelous Marv mock myself last week. So, but, you know, Kyler removed all doubt, and the coaches removed all, you know, Drew Petzing removed all doubt. This is his guy. And I love what Kyler said to him about the game. And I love what Gannon said about, you know, being happy for the players. But, you know, I mean, it would mean a lot too if the Cardinals defense could show up in a big way to end the season, because that's where, you know, things have got, again, I don't buy they just so suck they can't play. I think it's a combination of putting the wrong people in the wrong places. And also, like I said, not leveraging guys well enough in the coverage scenarios, and at times leaving receivers ridiculously wide open. That's got to stop. That's really got to stop, as it did, you know, consistently this year. I mean, we saw way too many. I mean, when Christian McCaffrey can catch a ball, fall down on a wheel route 25 yards downfield, wide open, trip and get up and still score from 10 yards without still anyone 10 yards from him, something's the matter, you know. So let's get on top of this, where those coverage gaffes now become a thing of the past. And we were up against a good passing team this week. Let's see if they can get it done. Kyle, what are your thoughts?
So I got two little thoughts that have been sitting on me for the last bit. I'm glad we got to talk about the fake or the onside kick, because that was the thing that I was most excited about. But in terms of the point with the draft picks and them going from the 2 pick to now the 4 pick, they're sitting at 4. If they win next week, the highest draft pick they could fall to is 7. They'll be somewhere between 4 and 7, depending on how the Giants and Titans and Chargers results go. But to this point, this happens every year where a fan base wins a game late in the season and the team feels like they've been slighted because they won. And every year it's the same point. You just don't know how it's going to end up. I think back to the 2019 season, where the last game of the season, the Giants were playing Washington. I think Case Keenum was the backup for Washington. And he like dove for the goal line and they called him short, and Washington lost to the Giants. And and Washington got a higher pick, and the fan base was like, yes, we got the 2 pick instead of the 4 pick, and the Giants got the 4 pick instead of the 2 pick. Well, that second overall pick became Chase Young, who's no longer on Washington. And the 4 pick that the Giants won became Andrew Thomas, the highest paid left tackle in the NFL right now. Think back to 2021 when the Jets had no wins, and they were like 14-point underdogs, and they went into the Rams and they beat the Rams in Los Angeles. I think Flacco might have been their quarterback even, but they went into Los Angeles and beat the Rams as 14-point underdogs, and they lost the number one pick, and Jets fans were like, no, we could have had Trevor Lawrence and all that. Well, they ended up picking Zach Wilson, and it ended up messing them up, but if they had taken Justin Fields, it might not have looked as bad for the Jets. It was more so they picked the wrong quarterback.
Right.
2 years ago with the Detroit Lions, they had that overtime win against the Vikings that knocked him out of the one pick and gave the one pick to Jacksonville, and they were like upset that they weren't going to get Aiden Hutchinson. Well, lo and behold, Aiden Hutchinson fell to them at number two anyways.
Correct.
Last year, Houston, remember the Davis Mills Hail Mary that took him out of the one pick? Well, they would have taken Bryce Young over CJ Stroud if they had had the number one pick in the draft. So you just don't know how it's going to end up here. Like I said, maybe Marvin Harrison will fall to number four. Maybe the Cardinals will end up with the seven pick. Who knows? You just don't know how it's going to work out. You mentioned the linemen in this draft. I look at Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama and think that he's going to be the anchor of a defense like Sauce Gardner is for the Jets for whoever ends up taking him. I think it would be great if the Cardinals ended up with Kool-Aid McKinstry, almost as exciting as if they end up with Marvin Harrison Jr. So you just don't know how it's going to end up going. Just get the draft pick that you get and figure out the rest from there, because it's impossible to try and put yourself in a position to improve your draft positioning, because the draft is really, really random. It's really, really random. And it's hard to know exactly who gets what pick and who's going to win out, because it's a super imprecise science. So it happens every year that a team wins a game that the fan base in the moment thinks, oh, it ruined our draft position and ruined our rebuild. And that's usually not the case. Usually the results are random and it just might work out for you. And you have to wait until years later to figure out how the results ended up actually impacting the teams.
Yeah, we'll have quite a bit of draft coverage here on Red Rain. I'll just say this. I mean, even picking at seven, any of these players would be hugely exciting for me. Malik Nabers, LSU, he's on right now. I don't know if he's playing today, but they're bowling right now. Roma Dews Odunze, the big kid, big receiver, 6'3" from Washington. He's on later tonight. I mean, that those two guys, plus, can you imagine a tight end tandem of McBride and Bowers?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tell you this right now, if the Cardinals picked Bowers, every DC in the NFC West would be like, frick.
Brock Bowers, he doesn't have the timing with his quarterback, obviously, but he's Gronk. He is line him up in the slot, line him up on the outside. He's never going to go out of bounds because you can't tackle him. He's like a polar bear that goes out there and catches passes. He's amazing.
Well, the thing about the NFL today is you winning over the middle of the field. I mean, here's a thing yesterday that I was so psyched. I've been urging Kyler to do this for 3-4 weeks now. And, you know, we're talking about this with Dan Bickley and Vince Murata, was occasionally, you know, running up the middle is going to slow the pass rush down. And they called that quarterback draw for 12 yards. That was a work of art. And I think that set the stage, gang, for the stacking the touchdowns, because the rush turned into a mush rush, just as Dan Bickley described it. Because the biggest thing teams fear, and Kyler, I'm starting to pick up on this, is him escaping through the middle is the biggest thing they fear. And if you noticed on that draw, there was Fro blocked the linebacker perfectly. And Fro's playing awesome right now at center. And there was nobody there to defend him for 12 yards, and he took the slide. I mean, that was such a huge play. It might have been, you know, under people's radar at the end of this game because of the great Dortch catches and the great Connor runs and the Michael Carter runs and the Michael Carter touchdown. What a receiver out of the backfield he is. Oh, my goodness. Do we have a nice dandy there? And I love Amari DiMercato, a year stronger and you know, in the weight room. He's going to be a factor too. Our running back room is pretty special right now. And then to note, and I tweeted this out, it was pure joy to watch Paris Johnson Jr. render Hassan Reddick ineffective for the entire afternoon. I mean, I don't know if Reddick ever really got a finger on Kyler. And that's saying something. I mean, here's a guy in Paris Johnson Jr. He balled his tail off yesterday. I watched, took great joy and pride in watching him. And nothing against Hassan. It's not his fault the Cardinals blew it with him. But and I like Hassan so much, the player. But for that to happen in this game was a huge step forward as well. I mean, and Sweat, we did a great job against. Too bad about DJ Humphreys going down with a knee. Hope he's okay. But Kelvin Beachum came in, and we didn't miss a beat. And he was fantastic. I got to love Kelvin Beachum. But getting back to the draft, I mean, Brock Bowers, if we drafted Brock Bowers, I would do, well, I can't do this at 68, but I would try to do cartwheels and backflips. I mean, Brock Bowers is such a special player. Sometimes you forget, I mean, he's a receiver first. So, you know, I mean, look what Elijah Higgins has given us too. Imagine having three-time tight ends like that. But you can treat Bowers as a bigger wide receiver anyway. I mean, you know, if you're missing out on Marvin Harrison Jr. because of his size, well, Brock Bowers is taller and he's a little heavier and he runs he runs really well. And he's a tackle breaker. So, you know, if you wind up with Bowers, I don't think that's going to, you know, be a problem. And then the tackle situation, Olu, Fashanu, Penn State, and Joe Alt, Jr., Notre Dame. I mean, two left tackle studs would allow you to keep Paris Johnson at right tackle, where he and Will Hernandez are building something special on that side. I mean, of the two, I mean, you can't go wrong with either one. I mean, I think the better technician is Alt. And he's very precise, but Olu is so athletically gifted. I mean, I don't think you could flip a coin, and either one would be so exciting. And then, you know, if you go with a receiver first, I love the guys in the Mims just came out of Marius Mims of Georgia. He'd be a right tackle. You'd flip PJJ over to left tackle. Love the kid CJ Latham. He's from Massachusetts, of course. I have a special place for him, of Alabama. He, too, I think you put in right tackle. You switch Paris Johnson over. Love the kid of Fagua from Oregon State. Wow. Talese. Foga. How do you spell it? How do you pronounce his last name?
It's like, I am actually not sure.
Fonga. I think it's F-A-U-N-G-A, Fuanga. Yeah, boy, oh boy, is he light on his feet. I'm watching his tape and I'm thinking, wow, this reminds me of Tristan Wirfs and his hand pops, his agility at his size. He's like 6'6", 330. So, you know, they're going to be, and then we're not even talking about could be the top defensive players. Like you said, Kool-Aid McKinstry, he's going to be there when the Cardinals pick. He's not scheduled to go that high anyway. And then you got the edge rushers. The guy that makes me nervous is Jared Verse. I know everyone's mocking him to us in the middle of the first round. I watched him in the Boston College game, a game that they nearly lost to BC. And if it weren't for a missed extra point, that game could have gone to overtime. BC gave them all they could handle. He wasn't good. I mean, I'm watching because I'm thinking Cardinals, wow, yeah. I mean, this guy comes in. Now, I know he peaked towards the end of the year. But then I was going back and watching other tapes of him. Really hot and cold from what I saw. I mean, for – You know, I know he has the physical measurables, but, you know, and maybe he just explodes as a pro. I don't know. But I would not be a fan. I think there are better players, more safer picks than him. But he'll go high. He'll go in the first round somewhere because of his physical abilities. But how about, you know, I mean, a guy who I would prefer. I mean, there are other rushers in this draft. Is Turner from Alabama, 6'3", 242. He is dynamic. I'd take him over Verse anytime. Love the kid. Tuamalo from Ohio State, 6'4", 270. Love Chop Robinson. I also, how about the kid from Braylon Trice from Washington? Watch him tonight. That kid is super. Super dynamic off that edge.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch all of these playoff games that have, you know, 10 guys who are going to get picked in the first round. And like you're just like we're just saying, there's talent up and down the board. You have no idea which is going to work out and which is not. And I've seen mock drafts that still have Marvin Harrison going to the Cardinals at number 4. It's not like they're totally out of the Marvin Harrison game at this point. It's just.
Right.
The math is changing a little bit, and that's fine. It's going to be something exciting. The other point that I had, I just wanted to get in real quick, is that I think you would agree that regardless of what happens in the Seattle game, that third quarter is going to be the best quarter of the season for the Arizona Cardinals. When you talk about a 10-play, 75-yard touchdown drive that took up 6.5 minutes,
right?
Immediate three and out on defense, and then...
Right.
Get the ball at the 23, 5 minute, 77-yard drive, touchdown,
right.
2-point conversion, tie the game. I think without question, maybe I'm thinking back to the Cowboy game, and I don't think there was a drive in there that really, or a quarter that matched what they did against the Eagles in that third quarter. That's going to go down as the best quarter of the season for them. And I remember I was watching the Fox post-game show, and they kind of panned into Gannon in the visitors' locker room, and the visitors' locker room in Philadelphia is super small, so they're all just packed in together, and you see Austin Fort and Bidwell, and I think Dave Sears might have been back there too, making the trip to Philly, and it's just you could see how thrilled Gannon was by not just winning the game, but just the performance in the third quarter specifically. It was just...
What did he say?
So he was... They only showed like 15 seconds of the clip, but you could just see the big smile across his face. And he was talking about offense going up and down the field. And he mentioned offensive line and receivers, and just he had the big smile on his face. You could see Bidwell over his shoulder, and Bidwell had a bit of a smile on it, kind of the half smile that Bidwell does. But still, you could see that Bidwell was excited for him. And you know, I joked that it was the pettiest win of the season because Gannon beat the team that, you know, he beat his old team that he kind of left on bad terms. And yes, it may have moved them from the 2 pick to the 4 pick, but by putting up 4 touchdowns and 4 drives in the second half, that was definitely the pettiest win of the season. And it was super fun. And everyone seemed excited about it. The problem is there's no space in the visitors' locker room. So they're all just like piled in on top of each other as Gannon's in the center giving the whole speech at the end of the game.
Yep. Well, exciting moment for him, certainly, and for the players. You know, and I mean, what mystifies me is, you know, that this is a revenge game for Gannon. Hello. He screwed that team over big time. I mean, if it's any revenge game, it would have been on them. So he avoided the revenge.
Yeah, but the whole end of his tenure, he didn't leave on the greatest terms. People were accusatory of him for, you know, mailing it in for the Super Bowl. And I don't know if you read the ESPN story that came out. They basically were talking about, like, the Eagles wanted to hire Vic Fangio. And because Gannon wasn't transparent about his interest in the Cardinals, they lost out on Vic Fangio and lost out on other defensive coordinator candidates.
Yes. I mean, the whole thing was a debacle and, you know, a scam. I mean, and a sham. It was an absolute sham. Breaking of the rules and then lying about it. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that it looks like the players like Gannon this much, because he like talks out of both sides of his mouth, and at times he just comes across as so disingenuous. He's just kind of like a car salesman at times. I don't know how to describe it, but you know, and he's got had this allure going of you know, this kind of, you know, getting away with people thinking that this he's got this team playing so hard when, I mean, for most of the season, his defense, and he's a defensive guy, has been awful. I mean, there's no sugarcoating that. They're 31st in the NFL. And then people say, because he has sucked talent. Well, you pissed away Isaiah Simmons. You moved Zaven Collins, the best inside linebacker you had on the roster, to edge. You know, the every Philly guy you brought in didn't play well. I mean, including the Kaiser White, who was good 1 week, awful the next. Shashare, you know, has been not a steady contributor. He brings in Kayvon Wallace, cuts him like after four games, who it was playing terrible. I mean, even on the other side of the ball, he brings in the receiver. Oh gosh, what's his name? Number 10. I'll think of it in a minute. But you know, he was their fourth receiver in Philly and supposed to be a contributor here. He hasn't done anything
Zach
for
Pascal.
Us. Yes, Zach Pascal. And you know, he's been decent on special teams, but nothing on offense. I mean, if these are his own guys and none of them are playing well, what does that say? I mean, you know, you would think that he'd get his own guys to play well. That would be a good start. But, you know, but he's managed to create this kind of, and I think it's a myth, but this kind of myth that this team's Cardinals team plays harder than other Cardinals teams. When if you look back at Cliff Kingsbury's 4 years, the Cardinals in 4 years have never played more closer competitive games throughout the whole of those 4 years than in Cliff's. If you go back to the BA years, you know, there were a lot of stinker games that weren't close at all, except for the big year they had in 2015. I mean, it was feast or famine in some of those games. I mean, but so anyway, it's surprising to me because, you know, and the way that he's treated some players like Catrell Clark really pisses me off, and whatnot. But it appeared yesterday like guys with Connor and Kyler were saying we're happy to win this for Gannon. So, and if they're being ingenuous about that, so, you know, fine. Because, you know, if that's the case, then hopefully, you know, moving forward, they can grow this thing and stop playing inept defense, which they did yesterday. They stopped playing inept defense, which is great. Good timing for them. But, I mean, I'm glad you shared that. You know, that moment in the locker room, because I didn't see it, but, you know, that was must have been a special moment. And, but the Mona Lisa smile, and I want to end it on this from my end, and Kyle, you can add anything you want at the end. The Mona Lisa smile, the most mysterious, moment of the game for me was watching Monty Ossenfort hyperventilating, literally, it looked like, I mean, it looked like he'd seen a ghost. In the fourth quarter, while the Cardinals are driving, I think after the Cardinals tied the game, they had a shot of him. It's memeing over on Twitter. I mean, what was he thinking right then? Like, was he hyperventilating, thinking like, oh, this could be so great for Jonathan Gannon and it could really confirm, you know, my belief in him? Or was he thinking, oh shit, there went Marvin Harrison. This here could go my whole draft plan. was it, or shit, I kind of have another coach in mind. If I were Monty Ossenfort, he comes from the Patriots and Mike Vrabel. I mean, he's known nothing but what good defense looks like. And for Ossenfort to look on at what this defense has been this year, and how ineptly it's been coached in so many different ways. I mean, here's the thing that really bothers me too, is that at least Vance knew how to highlight Buda Baker's skills and feature them and put him to work. Gannon's not doing anything like that with Baker. It's really pissing me off. Buda's still playing well, because Buda, you put him in any defense, but they're not featuring, they're not blitzing him the way they normally, the way that Vance Joseph did so cleverly. It's just, and Gannon, here's the rap on him in Philly, is he doesn't blitz enough, and it's true. Particularly when people are running down your throats, you got to run blitz to try to stop it. It's been mind-boggling to me why he didn't do that. Doesn't do that, but it just lets it keep happening. But just the same, I just wonder I just be so fascinated to know what in the world was going through Monty Ossenfort's head on that sideline, looking white as a ghost, thinking that, in the importance of this moment. What's your sense, Kyle?
I think that Ossenfort would have liked to have had the higher draft pick, but I don't think he was really like down there saying, oh gosh, how does this change this or that? I think it's probably closer to him than it was for the players and coaches, obviously, because it's more organizations that have the prerogative to rebuild, or, general managers and presidents are often looking, 2-3 years in advance at times with the roster, and that's kind of their job.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, Ossenfort was down on the sideline on the final drive of the game. I remember they panned to him on the Fox broadcast ever so briefly. And I'm sure that was exciting for him. Just the idea of a victory that gets the team excited. And, they're the players he has now, even if half of them won't be on the team by March of 2025. I mean, it's the team he has now, and I'm sure there's some excitement around it, but I think they're going to be just fine. I think that was kind of his thinking. He's like, I think we're going to be all right. I think we're going to be all right.
And as what has been his custom, is he waits for everyone on the team by the locker room door or by the entrance to the locker rooms and hugs everyone. He was very excited, obviously, outwardly excited. I'm just so curious to know what he was thinking. And then, of course, like you said, Bidwell had that little half smile on, because you never know what he's thinking. And typically it's not something positive. So, it's just mysterious to me. All I know is they gave the Cardinals a victory Monday today, and they so well deserved it. Really would love to see them finish this thing out on keep this momentum going, and don't punt away this NFC West opportunity against Pete Carroll coming up on Sunday. And, really excited. It just was just an exhilarating win. And to do it in such dominating fashion, and to realize that, could Drew Petsing be a candidate this offseason for teams? I mean, when you look at what he did in this game, there's just, how he orchestrated this. And let's just remember this context. He had his quarterback in practice for one day this week, coming off a really disappointing game where the offense really squandered several huge opportunities that were presented to them in that game, and they pretty much squandered so too many of them. So, I was thinking yesterday while watching this, could this be the Todd Bowles version of offense for the Cardinals? And then 2 years he's gone. Cause that, what he just did put on tape there, it was a clinic. It was a magnus opus. I mean, of offensive ball control domination while getting a fluid passing attack, which, by the way, the Browns hadn't had until Joe Flacco arrived. And amazing how now the thing in Cleveland is, should they bring Flacco back and sit Watson or trade Watson? Wow. I mean, so the Stefanski offensive thing, I'm just going to do a whole article on it. I mean, it hasn't in the past been a particularly quarterback or wide receiver friendly system. But what Drew Pensing had going yesterday was everything you'd want in that style of an offense to a T, and dotting every I. Boy, was that exciting. So, Kyle, any last thought?
I think we've covered a lot of ground today, and I'm very excited to see what comes next for the Cardinals, regardless of week 18 and beyond. I'm curious to see what the chips may fall at the end of the season. And I still have 2 weeks. You issued your challenge weeks ago for me to come up with a blueprint plan for the Cardinals, a definitive plan of what I think would be the best option going forward. So in 2 weeks, I will complete that challenge and I will have my long-term vision of the Cardinals set up for you.
That's good, because if that goes well, we won't have to give you a homework clause in next year's contract.
It's good to know. Well, I've got 2 weeks to prepare for the test.
Oh, I like your chances, man. I like the odds. So for Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter and myself, we wish you a happy new year, 2024. Happy and safe and healthy and wish it for the Arizona Cardinals, coming out of the dark and maybe into the light a little bit after yesterday's stunning win. In the interim, may the red, red rain shower down on you into the red, red sea. Red rain.